You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Mount City Show. It's Nigel Rothman back in the chair. And leaving the Leipzig Late Show to one side for the moment, Manchester City's last three domestic matches have all ended in defeat. We're going to discuss that and much more with my three guests. Welcome to Rob Barron, CTID. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Nigel. Good to see you.
Welcome to Sarah Messenger. Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Nigel.
And welcome, finally, least to Nick Goldstone. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Nigel.
Listen, before we get into any specific games, Rob, let's start with you. What's your assessment of this almost unprecedented run of results under Pep Guardiola?
I think it shows what a brilliant regime we have all experienced, and it is absolutely nothing to worry about. The standards have been so high that when it comes to two league defeats and one cup defeat, some of the faint-hearted worry. I'm not worried in the slightest. It was not good at the weekend, but there's nothing fundamentally wrong, and I have no problems with being 2 points behind at this stage of the season.
Nothing fundamental. Good if I could say it, Sarah. Nothing fundamentally wrong, says Barons.
Well, not for the first.
Would you agree
with that? Not for the first time. I am going to agree with Rob. I mean, I think clearly the three games were the three games that Rodri missed. We know how important he is to the way we play, and so there's a slight element of concern that we couldn't get a win in any of those three games. And I guess added to that is, a frustration. We don't quite seem to have nailed down who plays that role if Rodri isn't in the team through injury. Or I guess by now we'd hoped it would be Phillips, but for whatever reasons that isn't working out in the way we might have all hoped. But I also, in terms of what Rob said, you can't take De Bruyne and Rodri out of any team and expect it to not have some kind of impact. I mean, in my view, they are our two most important players. Others may take a different view, but in terms of impact on the team, I think they're the most important. And, I think to be sitting where we are, I think if the defeats had been separated, if we lost the second game of the season and the sixth game of the season, we'd be a bit frustrated, but we'd all be sitting here tonight discussing another win because that would have been the eighth game of the season. So I'm not unduly worried. Let's, as ever, we'll see where we are in April and May. Just one final quick point. I remember doing this podcast in January and we all thought that we were getting nothing this season and Arsenal were winning the league. We wouldn't win the Champions League and we'd probably lose the FA Cup at whatever stage we were at then. And we all know how last season turned out. So I think Rob's right to be optimistic.
We've got two optimistic people then, Nick. Thank goodness you're on the show. You can give us some a realistic, honest view now of what's going on here. We've lost three on the trot. Never happens under Pep. What's going on?
I think the realistic and honest view is that we've been short of several really key players and players that are quite similar in their ability to hold the ball, play the ball. Bernardo's just come back. John Stones has been out. I thought he was absolutely sensational when he came back yesterday. I actually thought he almost changed the game, but he looked like a Rolls Royce. And KDB were also, you know, missing a little bit of a couple of the players that we've lost since last year. We had a good run at the start of the season and everything seemed to be purring along really, really nicely. But we just hit a little bit of a bump. But I'm not remotely downcast. You know, if you're going to lose, we do lose occasionally. We lose to the top teams and to the bottom teams occasionally. And you know, if you're going to lose to one of the top teams, then, you know, you may as well do it to a lucky deflection in a very tight game. I mean, I thought we were a bit under strength yesterday, but it was a very, very cagey and tactical game. I don't go to many away games these days, but I was there yesterday. And I think, was I watching it on the TV at home on the sofa, I'd have probably been a bit more frustrated with the performance. But actually, the atmosphere in the ground, you know, it was really cagey. And I thought it was just a very tight game. We played very narrow. We didn't really play with wingers for virtually the whole game. And, you know, we were just a bit unlucky. So yesterday is neither here nor there. I think we have hit a bit of a bad patch, but, you know, we've all been around for much, much too long now to not understand that the odd little bad patch really isn't worth being too concerned about. And as Sarah said, you know, January last year, we really did hit a bit of a bad patch and it all turned around quite remarkably. So we're not going to get worried. We're just going to go along with the ride.
Can I come back to you, Sarah, and just talk about these kind of missing these players? Because it's not a very City thing to do, is it, really, Sarah? We've got good players. I've got some injuries and we're struggling. I mean, you could argue that Arsenal didn't have Partey or Saka in their starting lineup. Arguably, they're sort of two strongest players as well. So I struggle a bit, and I don't like to use kind of injuries as an excuse, if you like. How would you respond to that?
I don't think I meant it as an excuse. I think if we just look at how City play, Rodri and De Bruyne are integral to City playing their best football. So it's not an excuse for not winning the game yesterday. It's an explanation as to why City weren't particularly great yesterday. They were, I mean, look, the bottom line is it should have been a 0-0 goal. We lost to a deflected shot with a couple of minutes to go. Arsenal weren't great either. They were better in the second half, but they certainly weren't causing me to lose any sleep last night in terms of their potential. But you know, we didn't, they got the rub of the green, they got the lucky goal. We can't moan about it because we weren't exactly potent up front. I mean, to be frank, Haaland could have gone and done a bit of early Christmas shopping. And that's not a dig at him because we all know how fantastic he is, but he's going missing a bit more than I would like at the moment in games, but there may well be an explanation for that. KDB comes to mind. So, like I said, I don't think it's an excuse or a kind of let's play the pity card. It's more, I think, an explanation as to why we're not playing as well as we know we're capable of.
Let's focus rather than the ones who weren't on the pitch then, Rob. Let's just leave KDB and Rodri to one side for a moment and focus on those. Sarah's mentioned Haaland. Again, I think if he didn't score in a 20-minute period of the second half last season, there was headline news that he hadn't scored for a while. The games are stacking up now. You got a view on him and his performance and maybe what's lacking for him? Is it about KDB and the lack of creativity and us maybe not in that final third being as potent as we've been? Or is there something else have you seen in his performance?
Well, he's still the leading goal scorer in the Premier League. Let us not forget that. Like everyone else who's human, he's entitled to a few off games. Of course, it doesn't help him if De Bruyne's not there. I think he links up beautifully with Foden. That didn't particularly work at the weekend. But when you also don't have Bernardo playing, then he's likely to be starved of opportunities to score. So I don't think there's anything in that at all. I think two things. First of all, we could and should have won a game in the first 20 minutes when their goalkeeper was all over the place, when we had two or three chances to score and didn't score. And really, in that situation, you have to strike while you're on top. So, yes, it could be in a draw, but we could have won just as much as they could have won. I was impressed again with Lewis yesterday. I thought Guardiola is a really good player in the making. Even when to me, the disappointing thing only was that the first tackles we tended not to win against Arsenal, when usually we're terrier-like in those tackles. So there was an element of caution about our play. You can't complain. Losing that game because we could have won it just as easily.
Nick, your thoughts on Haaland before we come back to Rob's talked about some tackling. There was a bit of tackling that got a few headlines, so we're probably going to have to talk about a couple of tackles before we move on. But your thoughts on Haaland before we do that?
Yeah, he had one or two, maybe just one relatively poor patch last year. I was less concerned in the last 2-3 weeks when he was missing chances, because that just happens and that will change pretty quickly. When he just barely gets in the game, it's a little bit more concerning. And I do think for all of his attributes, his close control and his first touch, you know, is not the best. It's not the fundamental and most important part of his game, arguably, but it's just that. But I just think that is what it is. He did look a bit sort of cumbersome at times yesterday, I thought. I'm not sure he knows how to get into a game that he's not in. And maybe, you know, that's not just about him, it's about the rest of the team, but it's within the next 2-3 weeks, if it doesn't start turning around for him, and yeah, we've got the derby on the horizon now, a little bit more pressure is going to be put on him from the media at least, but I don't think that's likely. I expect, and obviously we all expect, that it'll be relatively sort of short term and everything will start to change. But clearly he's pretty heavily reliant on the team that are behind him to find ways to get him into the game. And perhaps, you know, we were playing a pretty decent Arsenal team yesterday. Got a lot of respect for their team, their manager, their the fan base is a bit embarrassing, but they have got a good team, and they handled him well yesterday.
Can I talk? Can you kick us off, Nick, on the Kovacic there? Because obviously it did get a lot of. I mean, you were there in the ground. I guess I'm sure you've seen it replayed since. But your thought of that first challenge, I suppose, first of all, many people say it should have been a straight red. Certainly it was a yellow. And then, of course, then there was the second challenge quite soon afterwards where other people said that should have been a yellow as well. Just your thoughts on that for us.
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult to see from where I was in the ground. I did see the replays. I thought the first one was, you know, a perfectly acceptable yellow card. I don't think there was anything grossly read about it, and maybe it was a little bit borderline, but I don't think, other than, you know, for the hyperbole of it, I don't think too many people really thought it was a horrendous tackle that deserved a red. Arguably, he could have got a second yellow, and people will moan about that. But I think Oliver, the ref, is more inclined to try and keep players on the pitch, whether or not you agree with that or not. You know, it is up to the individual. But so I think he was a little bit lucky.
Okay.
And I certainly, you know, I saw a lot of comments from City fans on Twitter during the game saying, what is he doing? He must be crazy. He's going to get a red, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there was obviously a lot in that.
Rob, I'm always interested to hear your views on referees. You often have a view on referee performances. Yeah. And you must have a view on this one, I'm sure.
Always. Well, I did see some things that haven't been much commented on. One was Odegaard manhandling Guardiol in the penalty area, which by any stretch of any imagination, and you tell me if the rules say so, where you grapple somebody to the ground, that's a penalty. Why wasn't that given? Why wasn't Foden recognised when he was brought down after a skillful set of work in the second half? I don't think City were lucky. I think they were in some sense unlucky not to get the penalty, not to get the Lewis goal, where if the referee had gone on a bit longer, he would have been recognised to still be in play. So for me, there were two incidents which were properly addressed, and I don't think he deserves sending off.
Sarah, does a full house then hear that there's probably two yellows right, or do you have a slightly different view when you've seen it sort of slowed down and replayed?
I think the thing that's lucky is that Michael Oliver was the referee, because I think he made the right decision. Let's be frank, if that had been an Arsenal tackle on a City player, we'd have been praying and hoping that the Arsenal player would have been sent off. The first one was definitely borderline, but I'm glad the referee used his discretion to put it on the yellow side of the border rather than the red side of the border. And I'm sure that was partly because too many games, particularly high-level games, do get spoiled by sendings off, unless it's so blatant that the referee has no choice. The second one, yes, he could have booked him, but I think he very quickly decided it wasn't serious enough a tackle to warrant the second yellow and therefore the sending off that he'd avoided in the first with the first tackle. Just as a quick aside, but relevant, I think, City women got a really good battling point against Chelsea yesterday, should and probably and could have had three, were it not for the fact that Alex Greenwood was sent off in the 37th minute for two ridiculous yellow, or certainly one ridiculous yellow card. And that
That's
was
a time wasting.
Yes, and you know, let's not get into the detail of it now, but to come out with a point when you played a more than a half with one less player against the currently the best team in women's football in England is commendable. But it's a shame that that game didn't end up being an 11 against 11. So my instinct is I always want 11 against 11, unless the tackle is so horrendous or the behaviour is so horrendous that it warrants the player being asked to leave the pitch. But I think if we'd had an inexperienced or a less confident referee than Oliver, that's exactly what would have happened yesterday. Final quick point, whatever the rights and wrongs of it, Kovacic was stupid to make that second tackle. The one thing you don't do is give the referee decisions to make, and that's exactly what he did do.
Rob, can I...
add two very quick points? The first is, I'm fed up with Arteta jumping up and down, trying to get players sent off from the touchline, using two fingers to suggest they should be carded. That needs to stop. Secondly, the Laurence Olivier Award for bad acting goes to Gabriel Jesus for his behaviour in the second half. And he, you know, that is totally outside the spirit of the game, and he should know better.
To be fair, it's the one aspect his player didn't like when he played for City as well, because they have tendencies to do that. He is South American, I suppose, and I'm allowed to say that. Maybe I'm not, but I apologise to the three South Americans who might be listening to this show, but there we go. Rob, I want to stick some positives with you if I can.
Yeah.
It was a great defensive performance. I think Nick sort of made reference to that. And Gvardiol, for me, was man of the match. I thought he had an excellent game. Do you see it that way?
Yes, I mean, I don't know about man of the match, but he's very encouraging. I was a little disappointed in Diaz yesterday. I thought he was a bit off form. But as I said, Walker is playing very well. Lewis is just a revelation. I mean, he wasn't brilliant yesterday, although he was brilliant against in the Champions League. And yes, it is very encouraging. The new and the untested who are coming through and playing with their older players in the team.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sarah, your thoughts on that defensive performance? I mean, Diaz had a particularly, here's me saying, great defensive performance, and Diaz had a stinker, you could argue, of course, as well, at the same time.
He did. There was one lovely leg swing, wasn't there, that almost resulted in a clear-cut chance for us. Look, as Rob said, any player can have a game that's not to their usual high standards. Diaz has been amazing for us. He's a great defender. He just wasn't his usual authoritative self yesterday, and he did make a couple of mistakes, and he also gave the ball away two times, which, again, doesn't help in such a tight game. But actually, we looked really solid at the back generally, and that's why it's frustrating to have got to the, whatever it was, the 88th, 89th minute, and to let a goal to go in through a very lucky deflection. But defensively, again, I don't think we haven't got many problems defensively. The issue is the link between midfield and attack at the moment. But
and just picking up on that, Sarah, Nick, I don't know if you want to give us a view. Obviously, we keep saying you're in the ground and you had a view of it sort of firsthand. This Pep never ceases to surprise us, and Bernardo, seeing Bernardo in that role, who would have thought with the squad we have with the team, suddenly, you know, Bernardo's there in this defensive midfield role that, again, none of us second guessed that. His performance, before you do that, I suppose the one thing that was missing, of course, was it meant that he then couldn't create the chances a bit further up the field for Haaland and so on. So that was the downside to it. But the upside, I think, is what a versatile player, what a man to have in your squad to be able to just sort of play a role like that and just as if he's been doing it all his whole career.
Yeah, and it's not a role he's not played several times before. I wasn't entirely surprised. And he does give you just that. I mean, it's just the composure and the way that he finds time and space in that pocket. But yeah, quite deep. I mean, you know, we had good spells of possession, but really couldn't find very much attacking space at all. But it was the same for Arsenal. I mean, I did just want to pick up again just a little bit on Rico Lewis, because I do think, you know, he's a great prospect, but he's a great prospect. And he's only 18, and I don't think he's got the composure or the physicality to really work in, I mean, games like that. I thought he did look a bit out of his depth, to be honest. And I thought that John Stones, when he came on, really showed how that role can be played from someone with, you know, vastly more experience, and someone who's just grown into that sort of midfield linking role from God knows where in the last 18 months. But we have missed him, and it was almost, I didn't care that we lost yesterday, because seeing him back on the pitch and playing like that made a world of difference to me. I actually thought, you know, I thought for, you know, it's not that often that we make that Pep makes that number of substitutions. I say fairly early, you know, it wasn't that early in the game, but it was quite early for him. But I thought he changed the game with the substitutions. I thought Arteta waited to see what he was going to do before he made his changes. But I thought we did look much better and more composed after the changes, and we were just unlucky in the end.
I might give Rob the opportunity to come back on Rico Lewis. So, I mean, I suppose it might be a little bit unfair to compare a young 18-year-old with the veteran that's John Stones, of course. But you got an opportunity to come back to Nick and just maybe give the argument for Rico Lewis and what you've seen in him.
Stones is peerless. We know that. And so it's unfair to compare Rico Lewis to him.
I wasn't comparing them.
Well, you were, actually. Well, you were saying...
Only in the sense that they were both on the pitch one after the other, so...
Look, let's agree that Lewis was brilliant in the Champions League and that he absolutely deserved to play against Arsenal. And I think he's a wonderful talent and a very great prospect. I'll agree with you on that.
Rob, just on that then, let's leave the Arsenal fixture just to one side for a moment, if we can. Let's briefly just sort of reflect on the late show in Leipzig, as I described it. 3 points, of course, that's what was important. Rico Lewis obviously stood out for you as well. But that's the job done, isn't it? Because that wouldn't be an easy fixture going away there, is it? No fixture's easy, is it really, in the Champions League anyway, of course?
Absolutely not, but it is very encouraging. And also, we tend to criticise Pep for not making substitutions or not making them early enough. And what he did against Leipzig was he completely changed the game with the two players that he brought on. And that was wonderful to see. So all credit to him on that. And, the frustrating thing was to go ahead, but then to give away a soft goal in the way that they did, which they tend to do quite a lot. But no complaints. And, one more win means qualification.
Sarah, what stood out for you with the Leipzig win away in midweek?
I agree with what Rob said about the performance. I think the main thing for me actually is that's the hardest game in the group. It's one. We've got two games against Young Boys now. I'm not for a minute suggesting we should be complacent and think that they're straightforward. But win both of those, bearing in mind the usual congestion running up to Christmas, plus the World Club trophy in December, the more we can qualify with four games played as opposed to having to worry about games five and six, the better. And that's why, it's all very amusing, all this people getting giddy about winning the league in October. You know, Arsenal lost one of their away game. They may not be bothered about it now, but they will be bothered when they've got to put a full-strength side out in game six in order to be sure of either topping the group or getting through in the group, depending on how results go. So for me, that was actually the most important thing. It just moves us closer to not having to worry about certainly game six and hopefully game five as well.
Any lessons for you from Leipzig, Nick, that stood out?
Not really. There aren't any easy games, but it was a fairly straightforward group game in the Champions League. I mean, we've now levelled on 16 with the longest unbeaten run of any English team in Europe, with one or two other teams. And frankly, those games are meat and drink for us now. It is important that we win them for exactly the reason that, you know, takes the pressure off the later games. We did enough. That was pretty much it.
You know who is wonderful, and that is Alvarez. I'm sorry, but he didn't play particularly well at the weekend, but he did play brilliantly when he came on as a substitute and scored a wonderful goal, as he keeps doing, and that's very encouraging.
Yeah, agreed.
Listen, we're going to go into an international break, and we come back, and we've got three interesting fixtures, of course. We've got Brighton, and then Young Boys, we discussed, and then, of course, the game against Stretford as well. So they're kind of our next three games after the international break. Before we talk about those briefly, just my thoughts are around, with players coming back, which, of course, we've talked about who's been missing, so these players are going to come back. Do you think, Sarah, do you think Pep knows his best team yet? Because we've got these, you know, we've got obviously Grealish and Doku, we've got Nunes now as well. I think he knows his best team. Do you know? Do you think you know what his best team is?
Well, I think the thing that makes Pep stand out from almost every other manager is that he doesn't have a best team. He has the most appropriate team for the opposition and the circumstances in which we're playing. So, I mean, look, he has a core of players that he trusts with his life. You can put Bernardo on that list. You can put KDB, clearly Rodri, Edison in goal, probably Diaz at the back. You know, so there's four or five that would almost inevitably be picked in any team for any game. But I think beyond that, the other six positions, he will absolutely make decisions based on what he thinks is right for that particular day. And it's not that I prefer Grealish over Doku, or I prefer Foden over who might he prefer Foden over?
So for
those reasons, I just think we could sit here and say what his best team is. But there'll be some games where Doku and the way he attacks the wing will be a much better option than the way Grealish tends to play, which is good at retaining the ball, but turning back far more than we would expect Doku to. I think it's horses for courses.
That sounds about right, doesn't it, Rob? Would that be a fair assessment, would you say?
Horses for courses was Matt Busby's favourite expression. The thing that really puzzles me is that Grealish is in and out of form. You know, it's not... You can't rely on him to have a good game. He against Wolves, I think he gave the ball away at the critical time. Nunes is wonderful, but not yet fully established as a City player. And Doku is thrilling, but he also gives the ball away. So those players have months now to become accustomed to playing in this big team. And I think... Sarah's right. We have lots of choices, lots of very good players, including Phillips. And let's bring it on.
Nick, Phillips has been mentioned again. I try not to mention him every week because I just don't think he forms part of Pep's plans. I think that's obvious. So let's leave that there unless you've got a different view, which I don't think you have. Just sticking to the question in hand, which is kind of this best team question. As Sarah rightly says, there is such a thing under Pep. But Rob's mentioned a number of these new players who've come in. Where do you see them fitting in? Do you think they're still the fringe players for now and just be used in the odd game, or do you see it differently?
No, I mean, I think Kovacic for certain is clearly someone that Pep's relying on, I think, to play an awful lot of games this season. But it's hard when you're just joining a club, probably harder at City than at any other club. In some ways, and we always now expect players to take a year, 18 months to really bed in. This season, we're kind of more reliant on one or two of those new players, and we need them to work a bit more quickly than that. In the first weeks of the season, they did. You know, we seemed to click fantastically well for five or six games. But then just lost our way a bit, but Doku is obviously a very exciting player, but he's not somebody that we necessarily need to be, you know, he's not going to figure week in, week out. Kovacic will play a bit more. Nunes is obviously at the moment someone who's going to to rotate in and out until he really starts to establish himself, which may take some time. So, you know, things are not going to necessarily be easy for us over the next 2, 3, 4 months. I think we will have more poor patches along the way. But as long as we're still in touch come the other side of the new year, you know we're going to be in with a big shout.
Okay, let's sort of group these next three games. Obviously, after the international break, we obviously hope all the City players come back refreshed. No injuries, of course, that goes without saying. But with that in mind, Sarah, three games in 8 days. I've mentioned them already: Brighton, Young Boys, and Stretford. How do you see that sort of what's important during that kind of 8 days?
It's amazing, isn't it, how when if City had won the three domestic games that we've just lost, we'd all be sitting here feeling very confident about all three games. The moment you have a little run like we've just had, it sows the seeds of doubt, doesn't it? I think Brighton at home, we're very strong at home. Brighton are a really good team, but actually the way they play, I think, will suit us. At least we won't be facing a brick wall for 90 minutes, or we assume not. As I've said, I mean, I'm working confidently on the assumption that we will beat Young Boys, and then we've got that lot from down the road. The way they're playing, especially at Old Trafford at the moment, you'd expect a 6-0 win, but you know, we also all know what happened last year in terms of strange offside decisions. So I'd like to think that we can win all three. There's none of them that particularly alarm me, but I think certainly in terms of what's happened in the league for the last two games, you'd be looking for 6 points from those two and a win against Young Boys.
We need to win against Brighton, don't we, Rob? We don't want to go four domestic games losing, do we, surely?
We certainly don't. And Brighton, with their new centre-forward, are a very exciting team. They've also got an old centre-forward who used to play United, but I mean they're a good team, but we're a better team, and we should win that. The conundrum is against United, because individually United have some wonderful players, but they're not a team yet, and they do concede goals, and they're not very good under pressure. So that's going to be a really big game, and I hope that we're up for it to try and win it, as I think we can.
Nick, those three games, give us a view of those three games then in 8 days. What are your reflections?
I think it's very simple, because it's always the same for City. If we play anywhere, well, close to the best of our ability, then we should beat all of those teams. It will be nice to have a home game, which we've not had too many of for a while, for some reason or other. I think it's not the end of the world that we've got the break now, because it will be good to come back in a couple of weeks' time after a bit of a poor run. We've got enough to beat all of those teams if we're on song. But we will need to find a way to just improve a little bit in terms of how we've been playing for the past 2-3 weeks, I think.
And with this poor run, as Nick calls it, Rob, sort of final question for all three of you before we go. What would you say are Pep's priorities now then, in terms of sort of recognising out the Carabao Cup on a bit of a losing run? Rodri's presumably going to come back and go straight back into the side. But what do you reckon Pep's priorities are now over the next few days?
Well, I don't know what his priorities are, because he's a strange man and he's very difficult to guess. But I don't think he's given up the possibility of winning the Premier League for the fourth successive year. He's got an eye to history. And I think he wants, like we all want, to progress very far in the Champions League. So I don't see any relenting in terms of giving priority to either the Champions League or the Premier League. They're both equally important. And Sarah's point about making sure that we're in a good state when this World Cup business comes along is absolutely right. So it's getting players fit being able to select from a full squad again. And the noises about De Bruyne are good. You know, it looks as though he's going to come back much sooner than Christmas, and I hope it's not too soon. I was sitting next to someone at a meeting today who said that De Bruyne was the greatest player since Dennis Bergkamp, and what a thrill it was to watch him. And, you know, I just can't wait for him to be back.
Nick, Pep's priorities?
Well, hopefully he's in a bar in Barcelona at the moment. I guess he will. I would think he'll be thinking about just making it clear to the team that they can't allow any complacency to creep in, even after what happened last year. I think it's easy to come in August and think, yeah, we're up for it. But sort of 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks into the season, you just start and think, oh, am I up for this all over again? I think he's got to be just thinking about how to get Erling Haaland back in the right place. And other than that, it's all the bits and pieces around the edges and just making it, as the other guy said, get the guys fit and keep them fit as best as you possibly can. But within, I have to say, I slightly worry about KDB and his hamstring, given his age, that, you know, he's back and then he's out again. That's my concern. So I hope they don't bring him back too early. I don't think there's too much you can do about things like that. It's either going to happen or it isn't, but I hope that they give him all, as much time as is possible. But, you know, having Bernardo, John Stones back week in, week out will make a big difference. He's got to get Jack Grealish in the right place, because his season really hasn't even started. You know, he's been injured. He's been back and he's had one or two pretty horrendous performances. So he's got to get back in the groove. And otherwise, yeah, we hang on in there until the turn of the year and see what happens. I think it will be a good season. You've got Spurs and other teams taking points off each other. So I don't think anyone's going to run away with anything. And we'll be there or thereabouts.
And finally, Sarah, you help us get inside Pep's head. Final word from you.
Well, I suspect his first priority will be a game of golf, won't it? Probably in sunny climes, although that could be England at the moment. Who knows? I think I'd say two quick things. I mean, Nick's right. There's players who are not showing the form that we would want them to at the moment. But in a way, that's just one of the ongoing tribulations of any manager. I mean, as always, in any season, there'll be periods where some players are not playing particularly well and the manager will have thoughts about that. I think he'll be quite reflective over the last three games, and I think he certainly will want to give a bit of thought to the fact that I can't think of a single team that ever plays without some kind of defensive midfielder. So if Rodri is always our go-to man, and he largely is, we know we've got options. We've mentioned Stones, Bernardo did it on Sunday. We've obviously got Phillips in the squad, although I agree with you, he's clearly not trusted. Kovacic and presumably Nunes at some point might play that role. So he's got options, but I suspect he'll want to think about, if Rodri was injured and out for 3 or 4 months, what would be the answer to that defensive role that isn't just, even though I used the phrase horses for courses earlier, I think that role is so integral to how we play that he will reflect on what the answer might be if we didn't have Rodri.
Well, let's hope they all get back fresh and fit from the international break. Huge thanks to my three guests, to Sarah Messenger, to Nick Goldstone and to Rob Behrens. This is Nigel Rothman saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all very soon.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.com. sportsocial.co.uk. Sports Social Podcast Network.